Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care. Nahastan anila nijane go shavothya, nijane go shavothya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kiddushi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations. special drum song is known as the Leonard Peltier Honor Song. Leonard Peltier is a Native American political prisoner who was wrongly convicted in a March 1997 federal trial in Fargo, North Dakota. Leonard's case stems from a June 26, 1975 incident at Oglala on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. Leonard's trial was presided over by Judge Paul Benson. Judge Benson was very hostile to Leonard Peltier's defense team. Judge Benson was very supportive of the U.S. government prosecution team, despite many examples of FBI misconduct, including threatening witnesses, lying, and falsifying weapons ballistics information. Leonard Peltier has been denied justice for 34 years. His most recent parole hearing for release this year was denied. It is now up to everyone to urge President Obama to free Leonard Peltier. Yad Kiddushin Native Center requests all of our worldwide listeners to support the movement to free Leonard Peltier. Please visit the official Leonard Peltier Defense Committee website, www.whoisleonardpeltier.info, for more information. Once again, Yad Kiddushin Native Center requests all of our worldwide listeners to support the movement to free Leonard Peltier. Please visit the official Leonard Peltier Defense Committee website, www.whoisleonardpeltier.info, for more information. The Leonard Peltier Honor Song is from the cassette entitled Still Strong, produced by American Indian Movement co-founder and AIM National Field Director Dennis Banks. Dennis gifted me this cassette when he visited Southwest Florida in April 1997 as part of the Bring Peltier Home National Speaking Tour. Yad Kiddushin Native Center and Bobby and Danny Billy of the Independent Traditional Seminoles hosted the Southwest Florida Free Peltier event. Yad Kiddushin Native Center continues to support the movement to free Leonard Peltier. We hope you also will. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushin Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's broadcast is program 2 of my conversation with White Horse on his Indigenous Sounds radio show. Recently, I had the pleasure to visit an Assiniboine friend of mine, Mr. Sal Whitehorse. Whitehorse is host of the Native radio program Indigenous Sounds. The show broadcasts live Saturday afternoons from 3 to 5 p.m. on Sarasota, Florida's community radio station WSLR-FM. Indigenous Sounds can also be heard Saturday afternoons live on the internet at www.wslr.org. Whitehorse invited me to share my thoughts on Native issues on his radio show. I want to thank Sal Whitehorse for asking me to be his WSLR-FM program guest. Yad Kiddushin Native Center wishes to express our appreciation to Whitehorse for hosting Indigenous Sounds. It is important for the public to hear the voice of Native peoples. It is a perspective still not heard very often by the general public. Native radio helps inform and educate people on Indigenous cultures, histories, and contemporary issues. This is why Indigenous Sounds and other Native radio programs, such as Yad Kiddushin Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, is so important to be on the air. Many people do not know the true history of relations between Euro-Americans and Native peoples. This needs to be corrected, and it needs to be told. Many people are oblivious to current-day issues Indigenous peoples are still faced with. the U.S. government continues to impose its authoritarian colonial rule over American Indians and Alaskan Natives. The violation of human rights, sanctioned by U.S. congressional legislation and presidential orders, is a history of great injustice. America's theft of native lands by warfare, by forced removal of tribes off their homelands onto barren reservations, the infamous 1887 General Allotment Act, which ended tribal communal land tenure, Christian Manifest Destiny, forced assimilation during the boarding school era, the 1934 Indian Reorganization Act, imposing white government systems which allow Washington to control tribal governments, the 1950s termination of 109 tribal nations, and the 1956 Relocation Act that sent many Indians to cities for so-called job training in menial, low-wage work, exemplified 223 years of abusive U.S. government policy towards Native Americans. This history needs to be understood as racial ethnic apartheid, in other words, cultural genocide. The violations of every treaty by Washington is a total disrespect and disregard of Native nation sovereignty and indigenous rights of self-determination. Indigenous peoples are invisible to most Americans. Others have attitudes of racism, discrimination, and xenophobia. Some people still have outdated stereotypes of Indian peoples. American Indians are not respected as equal members of modern-day society. American Indians have the highest levels of poverty. Living in squalid conditions, we have the lowest socioeconomic status of people in the United States. Substandard health care, high unemployment, alcoholism, and low educational levels are serious problems in Indian country. Tragically and criminally speaking, the entire collective geographical land area of all native lands in what is now the United States is a mere 2.3% of America's total land area. That means indigenous peoples have lost more than 97% of our ancestral territories since Europeans first washed ashore on our tribal homelands. The less than 3% remaining so-called Indian land is under the jurisdiction of the United States government. We American Indians no longer have property title to any lands. American Indians do not own the lands we now live on. It is United States property. This is why many sacred lands and waters are desecrated, exploited, and polluted by government agencies and corporations. This is not only a crime against American Indians, it is a crime against Mother Earth. Mr. Whitehorse is an Assiniboine, one of the Nakota Sioux Great Plains Buffalo peoples. He also has Native Taino Caribbean heritage. Whitehorse's radio program, Indigenous Sounds, features Native music, storytelling, interviews, and host commentaries. An important aspect of Whitehorse's show is news about issues affecting Native peoples in WSLR's broadcast area. Several examples include disturbance to Native sites by archaeologists and developers, and the misuse of Native culture and ceremony by non-Indians, often for money. This is why Whitehorse established the American Indian Movement Sarasota, in order to preserve and protect the American Indian culture, traditions, and ways of life. These are concerns shared by Yad Kiddushi Native Center. Mr. Whitehorse's Indigenous Sounds radio program that featured me as his in-studio guest aired live on Saturday, September 26, 2009, on WSLR-FM. My friend White Horse has given me permission to share this recording. Please listen now to this continuation of my conversation in Program 2 of this two-part interview series. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinon One Talkwasin to all of our relations.
Okay, once again, you are listening to Indigenous Sounds. I'm your host, White Horse, and once again, we do have a guest in the studio today. Ernest, how you doing?
Ashkwe, greetings, sir. Thank you for letting me share some time with you.
Glad to have it, and now we got you talking again. What would you like to discuss?
I'd like to bring up the importance of caring about and working to protect Mother Earth. As Native peoples, we have a lot of cultural uniqueness and differences among our tribal nations all over the world. But I've had the honor and opportunity to visit a number of Indigenous peoples' nations for many years, from the Pacific to what's now called Central South America. And I feel very much at home when I'm around Native peoples because we have this ethic, this principle, a code of conduct called, in English, the principle of seven generations. We are raised, our pedagogy, way in which our young people are educated, is to think about how your thoughts and actions will affect seven future generations of life. These codes of conduct were taught and monitored by our clan mothers and our elders. And when you have this concept of thinking about seven future generations, that automatically brings up within your heart and your mind to have reverence and respect for all life. So a lot of the traditions of Native people, we're always instructed to also make a voice for the well-being of Mother Earth and all the relations. In my Wabanaki language, we say, Kinon Wontakwasin, all of our relations, the animals and plants, the birds, fish, and marine life, the trees, the grass, the insect beings, the wingeds, all of our relatives, all of our relations of the natural world, what in English is called biodiversity, sometimes the biosphere. And we are living in a very serious and, in a sense, critical time on Mother Earth. We have global climate change. We have major ecological issues like deforestation, desertification, the pollution of the oceans, the collapse of many fisheries, endangered species. And as Native people, we are modern people. I don't travel in a canoe anymore. I drive my own vehicle. But we still come from cultures that have connection to Mother Earth and through our ceremonies, whether it's corn, bean, squash, our sacred three sisters, where I come from, where the women plant the fields after our ceremony, or when we hunt moose for our people. We do that through ceremony as a way of respect to those four-legged relatives, and that we would only take the animal or plants that we need at the time. And we would use those plants, and through our songs and dreams and through our ceremonies, through traditional spiritual leaders, we would actually be told, you know, when to go hunt, fish, trap, and we have a lot of protocols. So a lot of that way of life of thinking about seven generations, about thinking about reverence and protection of Mother Earth, were codified through treaties. And my own Eastern Woodlands people, from basically what's now called Canada all the way down the eastern seaboard to the Chesapisquaki territory of the Saponi, Mattapani, Pamunkey, Roanoke peoples, for example, the Mid-Atlantic, we had these sacred treaty belts called the Quahog Wampum Belts. And the Quahog is a very beautiful bivalve mollusk that not only fed my own people and peoples of the eastern seaboard, but also was very important as a means of what in English is sometimes called jewelry, but it really wasn't jewelry. These beads, purple and white beads, that were made into different symbols, and many times an elder would wear them across their shoulder, and there would be codes of conduct written in a kind of hieroglyphic, which would remind the person that if you saw a beautiful diagram of, say, a white pine tree, that would talk about the protection of the forest. And so the point I really wanted to make today is that even though we are living in the modern time, in the 21st century, the values and wisdoms and ways of thinking, the paradigms that's not Eurocentric, that is indigenous, is a lesson that all peoples need to learn and appreciate and respect, especially in the area of ecology. And I also wanted to shout out to young people out there. In my language, we have a word that says Usitgamu. And Usitgamu, roughly translated, means action to make the world a better place. We're talking about social, economic, environmental justice. And I try to spend a lot of my time wherever I can and wherever I'm invited to attend a lot of events and protests and other activities that are organized and hosted by young people, college and students. I find that those of us of my generation, I'm in my mid to late 50s, for example, really need to support and listen to and encourage, as well as learn from young people. I think that's something in the world we don't really hear enough about and appreciate. One other aspect that I wanted to share with your listeners is the concept of what environmentalists say, thinking globally and acting locally. If you look at what's going on in what's now called the state of Florida, Florida in many ways is like a third world country where you have a agribusiness and industrial mentality run in Tallahassee with a very elite, wealthy politicians and business people, where a lot of Floridians themselves are living in very horrific conditions of poverty. I really think that people need to look at how corporations, even within the state, multinational companies up in the panhandle, there's a huge pulp and paper company that's been polluting that part of the state of Florida. And when dioxins and PCBs and other heavy metals go into the river systems there, into the creek systems there, and eventually into the Gulf of Mexico, well, that's like one tentacle of an octopus, because that company happens to be also in Indonesia and in Brazil. And so the point is that the concept of thinking globally and acting locally is something that we all can do and should do. If you look at one of the biggest issues in what's now called Florida is this issue of the Public Service Commission and the energy utility companies, primarily Florida Power and Light and Progress Energy, where they're trying to get the PSC to allow them to increase your utility bill under the disguise of paying for a so-called future nuclear power plant. I was involved with some fine environmental activists in Southwest Florida, an organization called Save It Now Glades, where we took 2 years to stop FPNL's effort that was going to build two of America's largest coal-fired power plants in the world, right within 5 miles of the Brighton Seminole Indian Reservation and about 10 air miles to the beautiful Big Cypress Reservation. And of course, you know, where I live in Southwest Florida was within that cone of poison and toxins. And so when we dealt with Florida Power and Light in defeating that proposal with some of the young people like Earth First of Florida, we tried to tie in how FPNL is by no means a kind of local, good, friendly neighbor, as their public relations, or I call public deception campaign, tries to portray. They are one of the largest energy companies in the world. They're the third largest utility in what's now called North America. So it's really important for people out there, whether you're concerned about the environment, whether you're concerned about social justice, whether you're concerned about economic justice, say with farm workers, for example, to look at the whole broad scope of the issue and look at it historically. And so many of these things tie into basically the abuse and violations and rights of Native peoples, those of us who are called American Indians. And so environmentalists in particular need to really support Native American peoples in our treaties. Many of our treaties were really the first environmental documents ever established. When the European people came across the waters, in my language we say Wampisikatonk, people from across the waters, we tried in a very good way through our Quahog Treaty wampum belts to share with the people who came here, the Europeans, how to live on Mother Earth in a respectful way. And one of the most important historical wampums people might have heard of is called the two-row wampum, which meant that there was going to be two cultures of people on North America, Tunapasagmano, Great Turtle Island, as you say in my Wabanaki language. The first row signified the indigenous peoples that have always been here, and that was very much seen in these beautiful purple quahog shell beads. And then there were 12 rows of white quahog shell beads that represented the 12 moons of a calendar year. And on the bottom row was, again, the purple quahog shell stick figures of human beings, which represented the Wampisikatonk, the European. And in that treaty of peace and friendship, through the exchange of our wampum, we tried to say in a very good way, welcome, let's learn to learn from each other and share our cultures, help each other to live. Unfortunately, what is still taught in history is really lies and so much misinformation. I'd like to talk about this because it relates to some of my Nichi Tanganooks directly, some of my ancestors, and this is the history of the so-called holiday Thanksgiving. People are still taught in schools today, when that holiday comes around on TV and radio, that when the pilgrims washed ashore, in our language we say Patuxet, at Plymouth Rock, that there was really good relationships between the Poconoket Wampanoag and pilgrims who washed ashore. If you learn and listen to the history of the Poconoket Wampanoag historian scholar Wamsutta Frank James, a direct descendant of one of the sachems that met the colonists when they washed ashore, Governor Bradford and military commander Miles Standish, we know historically that from the very first day they washed ashore in Plymouth Harbor, they responded to our canoes of food and fresh water as a gift to them by firing muskets at us. And when they washed ashore, they sent very mean big dogs after us. It was really only some 3 months later, when the few Plymouth colony women were ashore, that some of the Wampanoag Native women tried to meet with them and give them some food. Well, as I want to end this story, basically what happened was, not too long after that, there was what we call the green corn harvest ceremony that we have every year to thank the Great Spirit, Katantue, the Creator, for the gift of Mother Earth for our food, and to make sure that all of our people and our villages shared whatever deer, moose, fish, you know, all the food, the corn, bean, squash that we raised. It's our harvest festival. Well, in a place called the Great Green Spruce Swamp, very beautiful sacred place, which was a ceremonial ground, there were more than 800 unarmed Native men, women, and children that were sleeping in a longhouse. Governor Bradford had militias, the settlers, the pioneers, attack and burn down or murder or massacre those 800-plus peaceful Native people, some of whom were my ancestors, my Nichi Tanganooks. That was such a successful massacre that the Governor Bradford issued through the colonies, through the magistrates, that on the anniversary of that November time, there would be a holiday to celebrate the wiping out of the remaining coastal Indians of what's now called New England. And so the origin of the history of Thanksgiving has nothing to do with so-called peaceful relations between Indians and Europeans called pilgrims. It is actually a result of the European mentality of manifest destiny, of basically wiping out the remaining Wampanoag and Poconoket, Narragansett and Machantucket, Pukatuck peoples, for example. I could go on for the rest of the afternoon giving you stories all across, from the Northeast all the way to Hawaii. The point I want to make, though, is that we're now in the new millennium, and while we don't have to dwell on the past, there can never be any good feelings, never can really be any peace, until people who came from across the waters, the Wampisikatonk and their descendants, the Europeans, really face up to the real truth of history and enter into a dialogue with those of us who are called Native Americans. And this happens to be needed all over the world. We could talk about the history of what's now called Australia with the Pitjantjatjara people, or the Maoris of Aotearoa, New Zealand, or all over the world. We could just throw a dart on a world map, and wherever it lands, we can go into a similar history of genocide and the destruction of sacred lands and waters. And I don't want to dwell on that, but we still need to understand the history so that we can work together in this now new millennium time to deal with some of the real global ecological issues that affect all of humanity. There really was a genocide in North America. There were more than 15 million Native peoples living in what is now called the United States and Canada, that is north of the Rio Grande River, before 1493. I'm always someone that likes to talk about that when we say Holocaust, we're not just referring to the loss of life of our two-leggeds, our human beings, my ancestors and Mr. Whitehorse's ancestors, and my Taino brother here, Canuck Saber, his ancestors in Boracay, now called Puerto Rico. We're also talking about our other ancestors, the animals and plants and birds, fish, and marine life, the trees. And so when we use our indigenous tribal names, our names refer to not only that we are human beings, it also refers to that we are people of a certain geographic place, that we are tied to sacred Mother Earth, and that our relatives are indeed the four-leggeds and the winged and the waters, and that when I say Wabanaki, people of the Dawnland, where the sun first rises in North America, which is my confederacy, the Wabanaki Confederacy, consisting of four tribal nations, the Penobscot, Passamaquoddy, Mi'kmaq, and Maliseet, we are also including the spruce fir forest, and we're also including all the marine life of that part of the world. I hope listeners will start taking the time to learn what is the correct geographic names of places, as well as the correct names of Native peoples. For example, you hear the word Cheyenne. Well, they call themselves the Tististas. I'm probably mispronouncing it because, you know, my language is very different. Or the people call the Apache the Inde. So it's really important that, let me just use the word non-Indians, begin to really know and learn the true history of not only the Western Hemisphere, but throughout the world, because indigenous peoples throughout the world have a movement of trying to fight for justice and sovereignty and self-determination. If you look at organizations like the Indigenous Environmental Network that I do a lot of network with, if you look at the International Indian Treaty Council, for example, if you look at the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, which tried after 20 years to get the International Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which unfortunately really doesn't have much serious implementation or enforcement, but at least was a way of educating many in the world that we Native peoples, not only not extinct, but that we still in the 21st century try to maintain our cultural, spiritual life ways, and that despite colonial laws from many governments of the world that outlawed our ceremonies, that outlawed speaking of my language, that outlawed many of our traditions in the efforts of kidnapping three generations and putting them into boarding schools and trying to whitewash us, as I said before, that we are going through a resurgence of Native peoples all over the world. And that's part of our prophecies of, for example, here in the Western Hemisphere, and why I'm here today at this event focusing on Caribbean Native people, the Taino. It's called the Eagle and the Condor. And it was understood long time ago that there would be a time when the eagle, which comes from north of the Rio Grande, a sacred relative that we pray with, as well as the hawk in Central America and the Caribbean and the condor, what's now called South America, that this prophecy would mean that there'd be a time of cultural renaissance, a political, cultural, spiritual resurgence. And I don't mean to say this in an arrogant way. I am saying that the last 517 years has been like a very long, cold blizzard. And it's kind of been like a Eurocentric freeze on the planet. We need to shift and transition ourselves that we become universal citizens, and that we adopt the understandings and principles from indigenous peoples who have things like the concept of seven generations that still have, despite a lot of acculturation and colonization, the concept of reverence for Mother Earth and all life, and working for the well-being of the earth and your community and your family and then yourself. So with all that, I'd like to say Tabak Nik, thank you, Mr. Whitehorse.
Thank you once again, and we'll get back to the music, take a short break, and I'll come back, and maybe Ernest will join in. We'll talk about what was found down at Little Salt Springs down in Northport and what's been going on at Maximo Park. So again, you are listening to Indigenous Sounds.
Yee-haw. 7 years ago, I lived in a country where nobody wanted to live. It was sawgrass swamp where the bull gator bellered and the cottonmouth crawled at your feet. Once in a while, some folks passing by would stop at my place to visit. They would all set a spell, but skeeters gave them hell. They could not tolerate it. But it was good to live way out here with the birds and bees, otters, bear and deer. Sleeping all day and hunting all night, I was doing mighty good. Drying coon skins and cleaning gator hides, I was doing pretty good selling it. Once in a while, I would make my way to town to buy some coffee beans and bacon. And I'd go down the road by the palmetto tree to do a little business bootleg. And it was good to live way out here with the birds and bees, otters, bear and deer. Now wouldn't you know, it didn't last long, this country life I was living. I saw a man by the old gopher hole with three other men surveying. It wasn't long before you could see a whole bunch of people in building. Well, up off the bank by the old willow tree where the diamondback rattler was living. And it was good to live way out here with the birds and bees, otters, bear and deer. And it was good to live way out here. We will live in here before y'all came here.
Music from Seminole singer-songwriter Jim Billy off his 1996 Seminole record CD entitled Big Alligator, Howl Potichobee. The name of that song was Way Out Here, referring to the beauty and tranquility of Pahayogi, the Everglades. Pahayogi is the homeland of the Seminole and Miccosukee Native peoples. Chief Billy's song reflects on how development has and continues to impact this fragile wetland ecosystem that is found nowhere else in the world. I have lived now more than 20 years as an ecologist in the Everglades region, fighting to protect the unique fauna and flora of the glades. I am privileged to have many Seminole and Miccosukee friends, such as Chief Billy, here in Pahayogi. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. Today's broadcast is Program 2 of my conversation with my friend Whitehorse, host of WSLR-FM Native Radio Program, Indigenous Sounds. Please listen now to the continuation of Saturday, September 26, 2009, Whitehorse's live interview of yours truly, Ernest Pritzker.
Once again, I want to talk about what went on at Maximo Park. I mentioned that I have been going there almost daily. The archaeologists have been digging through the Midden area, and they have found some artifacts, some spears, some arrowhead, many, many shells. They even found some shells from different species that no longer exist here in America. They're now extinct, so they've got a lot of good material that they're taking back, and they will hopefully return those artifacts back to the Maximo Park. And also want to mention, too, the Florida Aquarium archaeologists, along with University of Miami, have been doing some digging down at Little Salt Springs. They've been doing that for years now, And that is also dates back to around the time of Maximo Park. That dates back about 10,000 years. They've been finding saber-toothed tiger bones, mastodon bones, giant sloth bones. And what's unique about Little Salt Springs is because of the water content and where those bones are, they're so deep that they've never fossilized. They still come up as actual bones. And they have been getting some DNA out of them. And this past week, they did find one human bone. They won't say if there's DNA attached to that bone or not. They did find an actual human bone, want to mention that again, and it did date back to around 10,000 years, so that find is as old as Maximo Park. And Ones, you want to add in with any of this?
I wanted to briefly comment that so many things happen for reasons. Today happens to be Smithsonian Museum Day, so that throughout what's now the United States, there are many museums that are participating with the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., to have free admissions to the museums. And this event on Vieques, which is why my Taino brother and I are up here in Sarasota participating in this Indigenous Peoples Forum, brings up the whole issue of how many museums, universities, and archaeologists and anthropologists and historians have not yet seen anything wrong with desecrating and disturbing sacred burial remains and also sacred artifacts. And the topic of repatriation of our Nitchitunganooks, of our ancestors, is a very serious concern of Native peoples all over the world. So those of you who live in Sarasota area, I hope you will really take this seriously and get involved and support the folks that are trying to bring some justice in the topic that Mr. Whitehorse is focusing on. These developments is that example again of thinking globally and acting locally, because desecration of sacred sites and burial sites and the cultural theft of many of our artifacts and human beings is one of the major outstanding issues that still need justice.
Anthros still keep coming like death and taxes to our land, to study their feathered freaks with funded money in their hand. Like a Sunday at the zoo, the cameras click away, taking notes and tape recordings of all the animals at play. Here come the anthros that have had to pass away. Come the anthro on another holiday. And the anthros bring their friends to see the circus, watch the show. And when their pens are untried, they pack up the things and away they go. But there's nothing left to study, there's nothing left to see. Still the anthros keep on searching for the truth and for the key. Here come the anthro that had you passed away. Here come the anthro on another holiday. Then back they go to write their book and tell the world there's more. But there's nothing left to write, it's all been done before. And on a cent of funded money that the anthro get to spend, ever given to their disappearing feathered friend. Here come the anthros, better had you passed away. Here come the anthros on another holiday. And the anthros keep on digging our sacred ceremonial site, as if there was nothing wrong, cause education gives them the right. But the more they keep on digging, the less they really see, cause they got no respect for you or for me. Here come the anthro, better had you passed away. Here come the anthro on another holiday.
Music from from Dakota singer-songwriter Mr. Floyd Red Crow Westerman off his Red Crow Creations CD. The name of that classic song was Here Come the Anthros. Mr. Westerman was well known as a movie and television actor. I want people to know that Floyd traveled the globe defending Mother Earth and the rights of indigenous peoples as a cultural representative of the International Indian Treaty Council. I had the great privilege to personally get to know Floyd Red Crow Westerman during a 1987 African National Congress American Indian Movement national tour in solidarity to free Nelson Mandela and Leonard Peltier. For several weeks, we both traveled to different benefit events along the East Coast. Floyd spoke and shared his music while I was honored to be one of the ANC AIM tour press secretaries. Mr. Westerman is now in the spirit world. His music continues to defend Mother Earth and the rights of indigenous peoples throughout the world.
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat-Kedichi Native Center, write to Yat-Kedichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat-Kedichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Okay, want to thank you once again for being here today. And also, if you would, one last time, mention your Native Center, the website, where they can check out some of your archive shows.
I've been living here now 20 years in what's now called Florida. I came down as a biologist, and there was some work to do in trying to protect the Everglades. So I live in Southwest Florida. I'm the coordinator of a small intertribal grassroots cultural, environmental, social justice news organization called the Yat-Kedichi Native Center. Yat-Kedichi is a Miccosukee word that means Mother Earth, which we got permission to use. One of the board of advisor members is a traditional Miccosukee, my good friend, and it's a custom of many Native peoples that wherever you live, you respect the homeland of the peoples who lived here. And so the center is called the Yat-Kedichi Native Center because it's based in what's now called Southwest Florida. Our website is www.yatkedichi.org. That's www.yatkedichie.org. When you go to the site, you'll see our mission and vision statement, and you'll see our programs and projects. We do a lot of environmental and cultural education. We do work with curriculums and some of the literature that comes out. And I'm very honored to host and produce, actually since 1980, my program on Wolf Mountain Indian Radio called Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. You can hear many of our programs archived on the radio, www.radioforall.com. Net. Thank you, sir.
And once again, thank you for being on today's show, and hopefully we will have you on again sometime in the future. And I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. Hope that you'll tune in again next week. Once again, you are listening to Indigenous Sounds. I'm your host, White Horse.
Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. I hope you enjoyed today's program. Earlier in the program, I mentioned how Indigenous peoples have been reestablishing our traditional cultural, political, spiritual life ways, and how Indigenous peoples throughout the world are becoming more unified in supporting each other's right of sovereignty and self-determination as Indigenous nations being part of the international community. In the Western Hemisphere, it is referred to as the prophecy of the eagle, hawk, and condor. The coming together of Indigenous peoples are what is now called North, Central, and South America. We shall conclude today's program with a flute song by Tito La Rosa off his Silverwave Records CD entitled The Prophecy of the Eagle and the Condor. The name of the song is the title track, The Eagle and the Condor. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinawatakwasin, to all of our relations. Thank you.